The war in Iran is much larger than anyone seems to grasp. True, the United States are being humiliated on the battlefield by Iran, losing not just their F-35s and radars, but their military prestige. But in the background, the United States have quietly been carrying out an armed robbery of the world's oil and gas supply. In the last 3 months alone, the US have hit Russian tankers, refineries, crippled China's oil supply, captured the world's largest oil fields, and kidnapped and assassinated two heads of state. We are witnessing the transition of the United States from an empire into a pirate state, and the birth of what I call the petrogas dollar, or the LNG dollar. In the past, the United States were very sensitive to oil shocks. Something like the Strait of Hormuz being closed would be a catastrophe, because the United States simply couldn't produce enough oil to meet demand. So if oil prices spiked, you would see the dollar crash and everyone run to gold.
This is unreal. Isn't this disgusting? Why doesn't anybody contact the president?
Today, the situation is completely reversed. Oil and gas prices are through the roof, yet the US dollar is surging and gold is suffering its worst crash in 40 years. See, the United States of 2026 is not the United States of 1973. Today, the US is the world's top producer of oil, gas, and refined products, and the world's largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, or LNG. They're completely self-sufficient. The problem is, even if you're the number one producer, you still need a market to sell to. And if you want a monopoly, you need to kill the competition.
The Russian economy is vulnerable. 80% of Russian exports are in oil, gas, and minerals. You want to depend more on the North American energy platform, the tremendous bounty of oil and gas that we're finding in North America. You want to have pipelines that don't go through Ukraine and Russia.
No one would buy expensive American gas as long as cheap Russian gas existed, so the United States simply killed off the alternative to create a captive market.
There will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
Blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines, the US didn't just hurt Russia, it also turned Europe into a permanent US client. The cheap gas was gone forever, and Europe was now forced to buy American LNG at 10 times the price. This greatly benefited US corporations and helped secure the US dollar for the time being against BRICS, de-dollarization, and the multipolar world, as governments were now forced to get rid of their euros to the point they became more worthless for the first time in 20 years than US dollars. The US had successfully turned its closest ally into an energy colony, bleeding them dry to keep the dollar alive. The US went from supplying just 9% of Europe's energy before Ukraine to being Europe's number one source of coal, oil, and LNG. Not just at Russia's expense, but eating half of Qatar's LNG share in the process. After the United States, Australia, closely followed by Qatar, are the world's largest suppliers of LNG and America's biggest competitors. But the US is now at full export capacity. They can't physically ship enough of their own gas to satisfy the market that they just cleared. The empire realized that they didn't actually need to build more infrastructure to win. They just needed to delete the competition again. Just as Washington used the cover of the Ukraine war, sanctions, and the Nord Stream bombings to force Russia out of Europe, they similarly used the cover of the Iran war to finish off Qatar's position as a global LNG player. By forcing Qatar to declare force majeure and then triggering the retaliatory strikes on Ras Laffan, Washington took the world's largest gas field out of the picture, crippling Iran and sidelining Qatar in one fell swoop. There is no doubt the US and Israel provoked this, because they had spent, up until this point, 3 weeks bombing Iran, gauging their responses. And Iran had made it explicitly clear that it was now an eye for an eye.
همانطور که قبلا اخطار داده بودیم، بلا فاصله کلیه زیرساخت‌های نفتی، اقتصادی و انرژی متعلق به شرکت‌های نفتی در سراسر منطقه.
This move allowed the United States to hit 3 birds with 1 stone. By crippling, even partially, Qatar's LNG capacity, they forced them to cancel their cheap long-term contracts. While the US remains shielded, this sent LNG prices soaring, forcing Europe and Asia to bid on the spot market for US gas at exorbitant prices, and would position the US as seemingly the only reliable supplier of energy in an unstable world. This timing is perfectly in line with the US-Israeli grab of the Levantine Basin. This is one of the largest gas fields in the world, right off the coast of Syria, Palestine, and Lebanon. Its proximity to Europe would allow Washington to keep selling their overpriced LNG by sea while also replacing piped Russian gas entirely. In that vein, Israel and U.S. company Chevron recently signed a $35 billion gas deal for which they began laying the groundwork 2 years before the Gaza genocide.
To move away from Russia and diversify to trustworthy suppliers.
As the U.S. began their global energy blitzkrieg in late 2025, they timed everything perfectly. First, the Gaza ceasefire in October, then a month later, the Board of Peace, and a month after that, the gas deal.
את עסקת הגז הגדולה בתולדות ישראל. היקף העסקה עומד על 112 מיליארד שקלים. העסקה הזאת היא עם חברת שברון האמריקנית, יש השותפות ישראליות.
Chevron would handle the gas deals and extraction. Meanwhile, the Board of Peace would serve as the front organization for the takeover. This corporate body was railroaded through the United Nations Security Council to provide the legal cover for Washington's colonial plan. A plan which China and Russia dubiously and inexplicably let pass. A closer examination of Resolution 2803 reveals nothing more than a fleeting mention of, quote, water, electricity, and sewage, unquote. The word energy doesn't appear once in the entire document. Then, out of nowhere, at the first Board of Peace summit, we see an oil and gas rig slapped right on the corporate advertisements of New Gaza. This, coupled with the timing of Israel's gas deal and the fact that only Chevron operate in this area, lead us to the only logical conclusion that they plan on robbing the gas fields in the Gaza Marine. In the meantime, the U.S. plan to topple the Syrian government had finally worked out, so Chevron wasted no time in moving on Syria's oil and gas, laying the groundwork for yet another energy deal in the Levantine Basin just 8 weeks after their takeover of Gaza's resources. This energy takeover in the Levantine Basin was formalized at the very same moment that Chevron were making off with Venezuela's oil on the other side of the planet and with the protection of the U.S. Navy. And it was barely 3 years ago that Israel sent a massive FPSO ship to try and take Lebanon's gas from the Karish field, only retreating to diplomatic talks once the resistance threatened to sink the vessel. Now, controlling Europe and weakening Russia was just the first stage. The real target is China. China is too big and competitive to destroy. The goal is to control it. By cutting off their most vital fuel sources, the United States want to force China to buy American oil and gas. This guarantees the dollar's survival and makes China dependent on Washington. This also makes it more difficult in the long term to fully de-dollarize, and it weakens BRICS, the Belt and Road Initiative, and the idea of a multipolar world. China receives around one-third of its oil from Venezuela, Russia, and Iran combined. Beijing considers these countries not just to be sources of oil, but strategic partners. In the last 90 days alone, the United States proceeded to target all three of those lifelines with increasing escalation. First, the United States deployed a fleet to the Caribbean under the pretext of fighting narcotics. They then kidnapped President Maduro and seized Venezuela's oil, the largest oil fields in the world.
Between Venezuela and us, we have 62% of the world's oil.
80% of Venezuela's oil exports used to go to China. This accounted for 4% of China's oil imports, specifically the heavy crude that China's teapot refineries require in order to make the diesel that is used for China's high-tech industries. Russia provides 17% of China's total oil imports. While some of it is piped, most of it reaches China by sea. This includes the heavy medium Urals blend that China's teapot refineries also run on. Despite the extensive pipe network on land, most of this is shipped via Russia's western ports in the Baltic Sea. The US knew that China would immediately look to Russia to replace that oil. So they moved that same fleet to the North Atlantic in order to cut them off. As a matter of fact, during the last months, the United States and their allies began systematically hunting down Russian oil and gas ships, not just in the North Atlantic, but across the entire planet. Particularly after the war in Iran began, we've seen an uptick in Russian tankers and LNG ships being blown up or pirated, All the way from the Caribbean to the North Atlantic, to the Mediterranean, to the Black Sea, Baltic Sea. This explains why Donald Trump wants Greenland and Canada so much, and why the Royal Navy deployed a carrier strike group just last month to the Greenland-Iceland-UK corridor.
Right now, Greenland is covered with Russian and Chinese ships all over the place. We need Greenland.
The goal is to target Russian tankers and fuel ships and corner them in the Baltic and the Arctic corridor before they're even able to leave. During the last weeks, we haven't just seen the largest amount of attacks on Russian ships, but also on Russian refineries and export hubs, including Russia's three primary Western export hubs and several of their top refineries. As a result, around 40% of Russia's seaborne oil export capacity had been disabled. That's the most severe oil disruption in modern Russian history. While these strikes were officially claimed by Ukraine, they could have only been carried out with US backing, permission, and equipment. The United States are clearly establishing a massive global oil blockade against Russia and China. The reason the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor was precisely because the United States imposed an oil embargo on them. Russia and China are much more powerful than Japan was at the time, so I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss the possibility of this potentially turning into an actual world war if it continues to escalate. Now, Iran export around 60% of the oil they produce, and like Russia and Venezuela, they export most of it to China at a discount. Iran make up around 11% of China's seaborne crude imports. Since President Maduro was kidnapped, China have sought to replace the loss of Venezuelan crude with higher volumes of Russian and Iranian imports, making a reliable, steady supply all the more critical. As Iran control the Strait of Hormuz, these ships shouldn't usually have any problems getting through and would in fact be prioritized as China is a strategic partner. However, the very nature of a war ensures chaos. Iran's experimental toll system, like all infrastructure, is being systematically disrupted by the US-Israeli attack, resulting in a crippling backlog. Moreover, in dealing with a pirate state, the threat level from Washington has reached irrational and unprecedented levels, as evidenced by the assassination of Khamenei and the torpedoing of the Iristina.
Death and destruction from the sky, all day long.
The US are now operating as a pirate state. They needn't even enter the Strait of Hormuz and can simply lie in wait near Diego Garcia or across the Indian Ocean to ambush commercial vessels at will. Ultimately, pricing cargo in yuan achieves nothing if the cargo keeps getting sunk by an irrational actor. For the time being, this means that all three strategic suppliers of Chinese oil are either out of action, under attack, or threatened by the United States. This is especially critical because the type of crude oil that China normally received from Iran, Russia, and Venezuela was a mix of heavy and medium blends. China's teapot refineries are designed with this kind of oil in mind, as they're able to break down the heavy, thick sludge and turn it into the diesel that powers China's high-tech industries. Russian and Iranian oil are chemically different from Venezuelan crude and easier to refine, but China receives them at such a discount that it actually makes it worth their while to refine them using the teapots. While China can recover in the long term and their energy consumption is diverse, solar and coal alone can't power their industrial base to its absolute potential. Even with massive reserves, these cannot compare in the long run with the impact of having a pirate state attack their three most valued energy partners in the span of 90 days. This oil is considered even more valuable when you take into consideration that it is sold to China at a discount, or in the case of Venezuela, as a form of debt repayment. Replacing this specific kind of oil at the same competitive price is practically impossible. This creates a cascade effect of sabotage on China's economy, of which the United States is undoubtedly acutely aware of. To add insult to injury, the US has rerouted this heavy crude to its own Gulf of Mexico refineries, increasing its own profit margin, and then compounding further on its profits by exporting the light shale oil that the United States normally produces at wartime prices to Europe and Asia. Furthermore, the US are now using their control of the world's largest oil fields to threaten Cuba with regime change. Half of Cuba's energy grid was dependent on oil from Venezuela. Immediately after kidnapping Maduro and taking control of the oil, the United States cut Cuba off, plunging its power grid into darkness. This shows that capturing Venezuela's oil wasn't merely about corporate greed, but for strategic geopolitical purposes, as a leverage, as a weapon to use for regime change.
Turns out, with Cuba and us, we are talking. In the meantime, there's an embargo, there's no oil, there's no money, there's no anything.
Taking Cuba, I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want another truth?
While the United States allowed a single Russian tanker to reach Cuba and issued a 30-day reprieve for Iranian and Russian oil, these shouldn't be mistaken for signs of de-escalation. They are only meant as pressure valves designed to stabilize the US dollar and global markets just enough in order to prevent a world war while Washington complete the hostile takeover. Following the strikes on the Ras Laffan refinery, the planet lost 20% of its LNG supply, which came from Qatar. Then, by some astronomical stroke of luck, Australia, the planet's second largest LNG supplier, is hit by a cyclone, taking half its hubs offline with shutdowns expected to last several weeks. Whether one buys that story or not, the result is the same. In the span of just 9 days, the United States' two largest competitors were taken off the board, sending LNG prices soaring for Europe and Asia. While Chevron and ExxonMobil take small hits in Qatar and Australia, they make back tenfold what they lost to disruption through the wartime prices exacted by the US. Russia and Iran are both Chinese allies, and they respectively have the largest proven reserves of natural gas on the planet. So you would think that they would be able to perhaps help China out in this situation. Well, the problem is that Iran consumes 94% of the gas it produces, and its ability to provide the remaining 6% was already taken out by the recent strikes. Now, Russia are already running their gas and oil pipelines, so that's Power of Siberia and ESPO respectively, at full capacity. Power of Siberia 2 is still years away from completion, and Russia lack the tanker fleet, Arctic class or otherwise, to help China make up for their losses, whose LNG imports, by the way, fell to an 8-year low during this war. Even if Russia could somehow procure the right vessels, US-backed strikes on Russian energy and tankers are now so frequent and severe that insurance premiums have skyrocketed, almost defeating the entire purpose of buying their oil at a discount. By hunting these ships, the United States are not just dismantling the strategic energy partnerships that these countries have built with each other over the years, but also destroying the very infrastructure that they use to trade with one another, from the ships to the export hubs to the refineries, forcing China to buy that missing oil and gas from the United States, because they're the only option, on the spot market, at exorbitant prices, and here's the final cherry on top, in US dollars. Think about the level of criminality that's going on here. So China has to dump its own yuan to buy the dollars needed to pay the very country that just sabotaged its energy security. They're losing their industrial competitive edge while literally funding the United States' takeover of their own economy. And in a move of incredible timing, the same day that the European Union banned Russian spot gas, that was the day Qatar's LNG supply was taken out. This date was known in advance, and I would have a very difficult time believing that the United States and Chevron were unaware. So in an emergency, like right now, when there's no Qatari LNG, there's no Australian LNG, and prices are through the roof, the European Union, as well as China, have to join a bidding war for US gas. So the United States, once again, have thought this through and ensured a cascade or a multi-layered system of gains. They not only benefit by stealing oil and stealing gas and then driving up the prices and forcing their competition to buy from them, they also win because by making energy expensive everywhere else, they deindustrialize Europe and Asia. That means European companies and Asian companies, that includes industrial giants like Mercedes, like Toyota, like Siemens, are moving to the United States just to keep their factories running. This creates a flight of capital and deindustrializes the United States competitors. And once that capital gets to America and is injected in the US economy, very difficult to get it out. So once again, multi-layered gains. By making energy unaffordable everywhere, the US not only guarantee their own energy security, but global energy dominance and the position of the US dollar. This racket goes even further. See, the US operate what is essentially a mobile taxi service for gas. Most of Russia's gas, for example, or Norway's gas is in pipelines. The United States puts its gas on ships, and those ships are in the ocean, they're mobile, and they can turn around mid-journey and change course to whoever is willing to pay the most. As a matter of fact, that's precisely what they're doing right now. It's a maritime extortion network. Even worse, the Maritime Action Plan, which was introduced just last month, forces everyone doing business with the US to switch to US-made ships. That includes the entire fleet of LNG traders, meaning everyone who's exporting LNG from the United States to the rest of the world. And that's a lot of ships, given that the United States now has a dominant share in Europe and will likely corner the rest of the market. It also includes anyone bringing cargo into the United States. For example, the refineries, they bring in crude oil. Around 40% of refined products in the United States are made using crude oil from other countries. So you have the choice of investing in an American naval shipyard and buying a US-made ship, or you get punished and pay the tax. Either way, you're going to pay Uncle Sam something. Finally, Donald Trump announced he'll be offering what is essentially a bodyguard service via the US Navy in order to protect ships at a, quote, very reasonable price, unquote. So this adds the final layer to the monopoly in the form of a protection racket. So all of this gives the United States several revenue streams, making money at every single point of the process and controlling it as well. All of this is part of the Monroe Doctrine. People have a fundamental misreading of this and think that it's a copy of the Monroe Doctrine. What the United States have in mind is not simply control of the Western Hemisphere. It's about moving to the Western Hemisphere, the planet's energy corridor. So to get your oil and gas, you now have to go to the Gulf of Mexico or through Washington rather than the Middle East. So the US accomplished this by using their dominant market position, by killing off the competition, quite literally, and then transplanting the planet's industrial base to their own soil. So as this rat race unfolds, where everyone is scrambling to move their factories to the United States just to keep the lights on, and scrambling to buy the last scraps of gas and oil at 10 times the price, this provokes a massive flight of capital to the United States, deindustrializing and effectively cannibalizing their so-called allies in the Gulf, Europe, Asia, which strengthens the dollar, for the time being, in a last-ditch attempt to save US hegemony. And the final act? The US boards up the exits and uses its navy to harass, disrupt, and pirate as it pleases across the planet. Chaos is the model. For the time being, it appears to be working. The question is for how long? In the past, the petrodollar was too dependent on political events in the Middle East. So by doing this, the United States can control everything without having to rely on bases in the Middle East, whether that's Israel or the Gulf kingdoms or actual US Army bases. So the United States produce the world's oil and gas on their own soil. The rest of it, they simply steal from Venezuela, just next door, or from other countries, and then bring it over and control it via Washington. And then force everyone to do business via Washington and build their ships in the United States. And when it comes to the oil that's left over in the Middle East or that exists elsewhere, the United States realized after Ukraine that they don't need to invade Russia and physically control their oil fields and their gas. All they have to do is keep Russia out of the market in order for them to corner it. That's precisely what they're doing now. By making it inaccessible, it drives up the prices and makes America the only option where you can even buy the gas to begin with. The United States have such a dominant position in natural gas that when they start wars, consumer prices barely even flinch. But that same gas in Europe and Asia rakes in a fortune. When it comes to oil, prices do go up in the US, but far less than they do in Europe and Asia. They have to sell their euros and their yuan in order to buy dollars, in order to buy the oil and gas. So they're not only paying through the nose, but they're weakening their own currencies. Whereas American consumers will be disgruntled at the pump, but the money is still pocketed by US energy giants, meaning it never leaves the US economic circuit. From Wall Street or the Empire's point of view, as long as there aren't pitchforks outside, it's a win-win-win situation. ExxonMobil, Chevron, Cheniere, and other U.S. energy giants are raking in their biggest profits in history as we speak. Their share valuations are at all-time highs. They have never had it so good. Although for this war, Chevron CEO seems to think the oil prices are still a bit too low. I guess they could always do better, can't they? Everywhere you look throughout this hostile takeover, you will find the fingerprints of Chevron. They have a finger in every pie. In the United States, in Australia, in Qatar, in the Levantine Basin, in Cyprus, in Venezuela. As a matter of fact, Chevron ships are the only ones that are allowed to leave Venezuela with their tankers full. But if the CEO is saying oil prices aren't high enough, well, clearly world domination and control of the world's energy supply is not everything it's cracked up to be. So next time you're paying double at the pump, spare a thought or even a prayer for the CEO of Chevron, whose life must be so difficult right now. The strategy is very simple. Produce so much gas and oil that you are self-reliant and have it in abundance. Force everyone to buy your energy by blowing up their infrastructure. And if anyone else tries to sell their own oil and gas, you just steal it in transit or disable their refineries or blow out their industry. So this makes you de facto the only option, giving you a total monopoly. In 1944, Bretton Woods established the current global capitalist financial order. The US dollar was pegged to gold until the 1970s, at which point it was then removed and unofficially pegged to Gulf oil, creating the petrodollar. Today, we're witnessing another revolution where the United States is decoupling from Gulf oil and pegging the dollar to its own domestic gas and oil production, as well as the reserves that it's stolen, of course, creating the petrogas dollar. This is far stronger because Europe's survival depends on having the dollar now in order to keep the lights on. And it looks like Asia's will too very soon.
It's incredible. We have such great. We're number one in oil by double now. We drill, baby, drill. We're double any other nation. And it's going to be soon triple any other nation. And that doesn't include Venezuela, who's been great. By the way, the relationship with Venezuela has been fantastic. Millions, literally millions of barrels of oil are being taken out.
So when BRICS countries wanted to de-dollarize during the last years, the United States realized that they needed a way to save the dollar. After Ukraine, the sanctions and Nord Stream bombings pushed Russia to sell their oil and gas to Asia, which they priced in rubles. And after 2022, Russia, Iran, China, Venezuela all adopted new alternatives to SWIFT, such as SIPS, SPFS, and CPAM, as well as new payment systems like Mir and Shitab. Now, Iran are charging a toll for safe passage through Hormuz and even pricing it in yuan. They're also talking about nationalizing the Strait of Hormuz, just as Egypt did with the Suez Canal. These are all the right moves, geopolitically speaking. The problem is that for this to work, trade has to be physically possible. And if the United States are sinking or pirating the ships while they're in transit or attacking the refineries at the source in Russia or Iran, you can't de-dollarize. As a matter of fact, it'll probably make the dollar stronger because the shortage forces you to go and buy the missing oil and gas that you lost at sea from the United States in dollars. As a matter of fact, that's the whole point. That's the whole idea.
We are punching them while they're down, which is exactly how it should be.
So if BRICS countries and the global south can't trade with each other, then they can't develop the Belt and Road Initiative either. By toppling governments in the global south and keeping the region in a constant state of war, the United States ensure long-term damage and stagnated economic growth. Meanwhile, of course, the U.S. industrial base remains untouched. Ousting Bashar al-Assad, for example, and destroying Syria's ports at Latakia and Tartus, in addition to infrastructure in Lebanon and Palestine, is what gave the United States and Israel control over the Levantine gas field. And it also ensures that the Silk Road, the new Silk Road, is never completed. Now, the Iraqi resistance, they've already succeeded in kicking out the NATO occupation after more than two decades. And this is important because Iraq's railway connects Iran and China to Syria and the Mediterranean Sea. This is precisely why Iran's systematic dismantling of the U.S. occupation bases in the region is so critical, but it won't be enough. If the United States is indeed moving to a more maritime or pirate-based model of raids and naval blockades and remote control chaos,
death and destruction from the sky all day long,
instead of land-based occupation, then the bases are no longer that relevant, and the strategy has to shift. The U.S. Navy are still parked outside of Venezuela and widening the global blockade. So what guarantee does anyone have that the U.S. won't position another carrier strike group in the Indian Ocean and do the exact same thing? They say they want to take Karg Island, but they could also just set up near Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean and then sink any of the oil tankers or any of the commercial ships transiting past the Strait of Hormuz. And again, all the United States has to do from their perspective is deprive Iran and the global south of being able to trade with each other and actually get oil from point A to point B, and then they will be well off.
We'll be hanging around. We're not going anywhere. We're going to make sure Iran complies with this ceasefire and then ultimately comes to the table and makes a deal. So we'll stay put, stay ready, stay vigilant. As the chairman laid out, our troops are prepared to defend, prepared to go on offense, prepared to restart at a moment's notice.
Purely from a game theory perspective, Iran, Russia, and China need to make U.S. piracy and U.S. blockades so costly and painful that they leave. Alternatively, by doing the exact same thing the U.S. is doing to Iran's industrial base, crippling their tankers, their refineries, etc., Iran can make the whole plan unfeasible. During the opening weeks of this war, Iran have been punching 10 times above their weight, taking on the U.S. and Israel simultaneously. No one can doubt any longer the effectiveness of their drones, their ballistic missiles, their air defenses. They've been systematically degrading the crown jewels of the U.S. Air Force, from their F-35s to their A-10s to Black Hawks to Reapers. As I've covered in my investigations, Iran have systematically neutralized billion-dollar radar arrays across U.S. bases in the region at a fraction of the cost. Washington's claim that their largest warship, the USS Gerald R. Ford, had to flee the theater of war all the way to Crete because of a laundry room fire that destroyed 600 bunks and went on for 30 hours is perhaps the biggest admission and all the confirmation we need that Iran successfully struck the flagship of the US Navy. We're reminded of how the Lebanese resistance shocked the world in 2006 by striking the flagship of the Israeli Navy. And they too have proven themselves on the battlefield today to be stronger than ever before. So while the final outcome still remains to be seen, these tactical victories have shattered the myth of U.S. invincibility. And it stands to reason that if Iran can successfully take on the U.S. Air Force and all their radars and bases in the region, then surely they can take on their Navy as well. And if Washington attempt to set up any pirate blockade the same way they did in Venezuela or in the Arctic, then they're not very likely to fare so well. The strategic value of this plan for the US empire is simply critical. It trumps all potential costs. Even being humiliated by Iran on the battlefield, or losing hundreds of thousands of troops, or having a disgruntled population, is all worth the cost for Wall Street. The United States are transitioning from an aerial power to a naval power, fully cementing their status as a pirate state. If they're able to control others' economies, they may not even need to maintain their 800 bases. From a purely business perspective, when corporations find a more efficient way to do the exact same thing and save costs, they always go for it. So why wouldn't that apply in this case? None of these events are coincidences. None of these things happened by accident. They were all carefully planned at the highest levels of government and corporate America. This is the United States of tomorrow. It's a pirate state that is completely out of control and has only one goal in mind: world domination, control of everyone's resources, and the use of piracy, violence, and assassination in order to get its way.